Hello, you're listening to the Hulkcast. As usual, I'm James Rushton, your host. Today, once again, I'm joined by Daniel Raza, back from London, fresh from London, just like Villa. How are you doing, mate?
Hello, man, yeah. I am back from London. I went to film some charity football today at a lower level. But here we are talking about Aston Villa, mate.
I mean, the level can't be that much lower than Aston Villa at the moment, surely. I mean, down in the Championship, it gets a bit scrappy here, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it
mate?
Does, doesn't it? But I'd say the Championship's not exhibition matches. You know what I mean? It's not an exhibition game. If you go to the Championship.
Oh, no. Every game matters. Every single game matters down here. Especially like yesterday. Villa went down to London, I believe, after an international break. Usually there's a bit of a hangover. But we went down a goal, you know, one goal straight away. Almost, it seemed instantly. It was about 15, 20 minutes into the game. QPR put one behind us. And what were your thoughts then? As soon as Villa go down 1-0, what happens? We fold, don't we?
Well, usually, yeah. I mean, that's what we've seen from Villa. I'd be interested to see what the stat is in terms of that from us. Because, you know, we've made a bit of a reputation. I'm sorry to say this. I think we've got a bit of a reputation in the last few years of being a side that lacks any sort of fight when going down. But I think there have been flashes of it this season where, you know, the team is at least capable of scoring goals. So we know from that respect that if they're not fully playing to their full standard, that there is always going to be that opportunity for us. And I did think that obviously when we were 1-0 down against QPR, they were going to shut down totally. Because it usually happens, isn't it, when we're away in the Championship. Everybody wants to play us. Everybody wants to give us a really, really good game. So if we do obviously go down, you can expect a lot of defensive work from the other side.
Yeah, I mean, there's things to be said about sitting back and waiting to break on the counter, and that's especially what QPR did after they took the goal lead. Ian Holloway's team did they did pack the box. They did put 8 men behind the ball. They did put 9-10 people in the box at some points. And the goals come. If you invite pressure, the goals do come. As I said, there's a lot of benefits from sitting back and waiting to pounce, but if you're going to consistently sit back, the other team's going to get a chance to score, and we did. Joshua Onoma smacked the ball off the bar, waiting for, and I believe in the build up to that, or just after, we earned the penalty from there's a handball in the box, and none other than Albert Adoma steps up and scores the goal. They invited that goal though. They really did. They sat back and waited for it. And Ian Holloway after the match says a lot of things. He says that they deserve something, and Aston Villa had the special tonic, but I don't think Villa were incredible yesterday. They were really good, don't get me wrong, but QPR, they made that happen. If you're going to relinquish half the pitch to Aston Villa, they're going to take that space and do damage with it, and we did. We earned the penalty and brought it back to 1-1, mate.
Well, I think we've been good at that this season, in all honesty. Yeah. I think we've been good at using the wingers. We've really been good at using space, and I remember Brendan Rodgers a couple of seasons ago talking about dominating space rather than dominating possession of the ball, but I think we do that quite well. Bruce is clearly working positioning a lot of the lads, so it does come to points where if the team, if the other team does sit back too much, if they do defend too much, you know, we will find space, and that is something that we have seen from us this season, and it happened. I mean, even with the penalty, there were about 8 QPR players in the box. I'm just thinking, how do you marshal that sort of defensive effort when you've got another team attacking you? How is every one of those players, you know, looking, they're just trying to get the ball out of the box? How does every single one of those players know what their role is? And obviously, that it was just pure confusion, wasn't it? And the more bodies in the box, the more likely it is to get a handball for a penalty.
Exactly. I think there's a lot to be said about the simplicity of football. I think if you're in the Premier League and you're structured and you've got a vision and you've got the right players, you can certainly experiment with the roles. You can certainly do a lot more than you can maybe in the Championship, the quality of player down here. Not to say the quality of player is bad, but there's so many games, fitness runs, you know, you run out of fitness at points. You know, some of these international breaks do come at a really good time. But with all the stack of matches, to take a lot of the complexity of the game out, it does help. You know, Steve Bruce's team, it lined up as a 4-4-2 and it got things back to, it scrapped a lot of, you know, crud that we had, and it freshened the team up, and we really benefited from that. Now we have a foundation which we can build off, and it's built out of pure simplicity, and I think that's something that Steve Bruce needs to be praised for, not being stupid and not being smart enough, but stripping it back, and we've been able to build some really good stuff.
Yeah, this is it. It was the obvious lineup today, wasn't it? It was the obvious lineup. You know, sticking Samba and Taylor. It was good to see Taylor back, by the way. Alan Hutton has been filling in at left back, and we have been praising him on this show. But now that Taylor's fit, it just makes sense to keep that defence balanced. that straight up midfield, Snodgrass, Whedon, Hourihane, Odoma. And he does like to play Onuma behind Davis when we are away from home. Makes sense. You know, you want to dominate that midfield a little bit more, and you've only got one fit striker who you think could play to this kind of level. So it did make sense to me the way that we lined up. It was just simple. The lads know their roles, and it just doesn't change too much, because what I saw over the international break was the fans were just panicking because of injuries. But there was no real reason to, clearly, today. Obviously, Terry not being there does lead the team to capitulate at some points. It will happen. There will be that lack of leadership on show. But I think what we're starting to see now is that they are coming into their own and they do know their roles.
Yeah, I'm really happy with this Villa side and how they... I mean, panic buttons were pressed when we lose John Terry, we lose Scott Hogan, and we lose Jonathan Codger. You know, Scott Hogan, especially through some kind of freak stomach injury, that has needed a serious operation on. You know, Godspeed with all that stuff. But yeah, especially when a player is struck down by an off-the-pitch illness, you start to panic and you start to look within the team. And I mean, we have made like two strikers. We have Gabby O'Bonnell, of course, who's injured himself, and Keenan Davies. And I don't think Keenan Davies actually stepped up yesterday, because I think that quality's always been there, that incredible quality. To not, you know, he's not the best person at finishing chances. He's not going to bump your XG up with, you know, clear-cut chances. But he is going to do one thing, and he's going to bring an entire midfield, you know, a really quality midfield into play. And that's something he excelled in yesterday. He's not going to, you know, pad his stats out with goals, but he is going
to
bring...
No, that's what I like about Davis. He does keep it simple, doesn't he? He does always tend to bring the ball forward. He's not your sort of typical sort of hold-up play striker where he's going to get the ball and kind of stay in one place. He does tend to run with the ball and try and get as far as he can. And then, you know, he is very good at getting out passes. One thing I will say to him, he's good to distributing out wide. He's good at distributing out wide. He connects really well with Snodgrass and Odoma, but... he does really seem to connect with Odoma. I mean, and Onuma as well has looked pretty good, but I don't think he has quite that sort of chemistry with him just yet. I'm not quite sure how I feel about that partnership, but I am really, really happy with the way that Keenan Davies is bringing others into play.
Yeah, I mean, I think we thought that without Codger and without Hogan, that Villa will lack for goals. And we're going to the second goal, a quality finish from Albert Odoma, of all people, a QPR fan, no less. Two goals, and the second one's a real, real classy finish. You know, that's world-class football, that is, from Albert Odoma. And yeah, he's brought the goals in. He stepped, again, it's not a case of stepping up, but showing that quality. And when the centre stage is yours, when the big man Codger isn't there and John Terry isn't there, it's about, you know, making a name for yourself. Albert Odoma really is, you know, this is serious quality from this guy right now. I mean, he went quiet for a few matches, but when we needed him, he's someone who somehow steps up to the plate.
Yeah, and one thing with Odoma is he's always had like ridiculous stats in the Championship, right? And he, for whatever reason, was out of favour from the team for a while. And that was like last season and even at the start of this season, if I remember correctly as well. And I don't know what it was that kept him out of the side, because the guy is clearly absolutely quality. I mean, if we swapped Adama Traore for this guy, right, he has to be decent to some degree, right? And I don't understand why we went through such a long period of time not thinking we could use a winger of his quality in the side. And I think it's fantastic the way that he picks up the ball, drives forward, and has that attacking mindset. I mean, I've been very, very used to seeing us have wingers who, you know, no offense to Jack Grealish, but just can't finish and just cannot get the job done in the end. And Odoma is one of the few guys that we've had over the last few seasons who has that sort of vision, but not just that vision, but also the ability to actually to make use of it. And he's going to rack up stats and goals this season. What is it, something like 8 or 9 goals so far?
Yeah, 8 across all competitions. I mean, he didn't score much last season, but he did bring the assists. He was our leading assist person last season. But today, he's, you know, this season, he's bringing the goals. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe that Odoma was someone we were looking to ship out in the summer. And it was someone that we didn't really, kind of like Lansbury, he was kind of on the fringe. You know, he was a person that we bought last year who we just wanted to make room for. We just needed him going to make space. And I think he's really turned it around. He was on the fringes. He was playing for the under-23s and, you know, he was cast out. And when that space come clear, he's done. You know, he's done his job. He's absolute professional. And he's done it with a smile on his face as well.
oh man, you know what? I don't believe at all that we were considering shipping him out. You know why? Because we haven't had wingers, have we? You know, Snodgrass obviously coming in. Then you've got Adoma. And after that, we are back into sort of Grealish, who is incredibly talented. For whatever reason, hasn't stepped up. But obviously now he's back from injury. We'll see what he can do. And then you're into sort of Andre Green territory. You know, we were a club who were using Gabby on the left wing. Someone who, no disrespect to him, you know, can do a little bit of a job up front, but he's not got the technical ability to play on the wing and be the main creative player. Why would somebody like Adoma sort of be the kind of player that we want to ship off? You know, there's a real sort of lack of these kinds of characters, a real sort of lack of these kinds of players in the Championship, you know, players with this kind of ability. And Adoma is the sort of player who, playing in the Premier League, wouldn't seem out of place. So, you know, I do think that he's probably our star man this season. There hasn't been a better player than him.
Yeah, I mean, he's come from the fringes as well, hasn't he? You know, he wasn't appearing at the start. I don't know if he was on the subs bench, either, but Andre Green was the man. Rightly so. But Albert Adoma's, you know, we've had to switch our tactics for him. We've had to drop him in inverted alongside Snodgrass, and it's really brought the best out of him. But yeah, mate, there was a special performance in the international break, wasn't it? Australia's own Mile Jedinak. What a hat-trick, mate. put him into the World Cup. You know, he really did put the team on his back.
It was probably the worst hat-trick of all time. But having said that, still a hat-trick, isn't it? He still scored 3 goals. Yeah. He still hammered home 2 penalties.
A hat-trick is a hat-trick.
Yeah, a hat-trick's a hat-trick, yeah, man. And I mean, one thing that I've come out and said as well this week is that if a player does have a beard, he should be in the starting 11. But I think it brings something special out of a player. But, you know, all joking aside, Mile Jedinak, he should be in the team. Man, I mean, after that performance, I can understand why he doesn't play today. Sorry, yesterday. But I think next week, you got to give that guy a game time.
Yeah, especially, look, Glenn Whelan, he's under fire all the time. The ball is, I've never seen someone fall over so much in a Villa shirt. But he's just on the floor constantly. He's running forward with the ball. He'll slip or get tackled. Something will happen to put Glenn Whelan on the floor. And I think he's someone that you trust with the ball at his feet more than Jedinak, in a way, in the sense that he's he feels to me as a better passer. Someone who's smarter with the ball. Mile Jedinak's more of an off-the-ball type of person. He's a big man to get in the way of passing lanes. But I just trust Jedinak so much more doing that job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, Jedinak, what people tend to forget is that Jedinak was a star performer at Crystal Palace for many years. You know, I was surprised at the sort of criticism he got last year. People were worried about the fact that the guy wasn't scoring goals and wasn't being creative. It's like, mate, Jedinak has always sat very, very deep in the midfield. He is supposed to be the midfield general, the guy who picks up the ball, is making the tackles. And, you know, for a large part of last season, he was the only guy who was doing it. You know, it was sort of the best replacement we could get for somebody like Idrissa Gueye. And I do feel that one of the things that we have lacked in our midfield is a bit of bite. I mean, Glenn Whelan's done a pretty decent job of it. But somebody like Conor Hourihan, I think it could really bring the best out of him. If Jedinak's in that midfield and he's doing the work, he's doing the defensive work in that midfield, Conor Hourihan gets a little bit more space and he gets a little bit more time to move a little bit further forward. Jedinak is not going to move forward with it. He can sit back and he can make sure that, you know, Hourihan's got that covered.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not completely adverse to Jedinak and Whelan started because, you know, Whelan's a good passer of the ball. You know, where Jedinak's flaws are, Whelan makes up for them. And where Whelan's flaws are, Jedinak makes up for him. His off-the-ball work is magnificent. He just gets in the way. He's just a constant obstacle for the other team, and that's something that we really do need. And we had John Terry at the back, sorry. Now we've got a big Chris Samba. We need more threats to make people think twice about playing that hard ball over our defence. And Jedinak's one of them. He's an obstacle. And I feel like we haven't got that with Whelan.
Oh, his headers. I think his header statistics are ridiculous, actually. I've actually got to find out about his heading stats. But every time Jedinak plays, nothing gets past him. He just doesn't actually have to do any heading when that guy's on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he just unlocks the potential of the team. Whereas Whelan, he struggles with that defensive midfield role because I think he does need assistance because all the pressure, it comes to a sharp point at where his position is. Whereas Jedinak is far more comfortable laying off the ball to someone who can do something with it. And that's not to say his passing's awful. We've seen him deploy some pinpoint passing, but I think where Jedinak excels is what he does off the ball. you know, running around, getting, you know, picking up positions, making, cutting out passing lanes, and just being a, someone just in the way. I mean, it seems like a waste of a position, but if you can get someone in the way, like Jedinak does, perfect. And, you know, we say that, we talk about the hat trick, and I think two penalties, yeah, it's a giveaway. But scoring those goals, you know, not those goals from set pieces, it's just a, it's like stealing a goal out of nowhere against the run of play, stuff like that. And I think Villa could do with a few more set piece goals. And you know, that's proving himself. He's proven himself like that throughout his career.
Yeah, I think it's good that we've actually finally got a team who can threaten from set pieces as well. Another thing that we lacked for years was anybody who could take a free kick. I remember times having to, you know, well, being forced to sit down watching Steve Sidwell take free kicks, or Ashley Westwood. Oh, yeah. Ashley Westwood was the worst one. You know, watching him take take set pieces. And yeah, you've got Hourihan and Adoma and Snodgrass, and each of these guys can whip in a ball, you know, for like somebody like Jedinak to head home.
Yeah, exactly. And he can tag him himself as well pretty well. He's a dead ball specialist. But Snodgrass takes him pretty well as well. Beautiful. He's sometimes beautiful with his free kick technique. But yeah, I hope we can fit Jedinak in the team. He did well against Australia. And I think it's a shame that Villa fans do get a bit upset about him going to fly to Australia and, you know, across Saudi Arabia into Iran for all these Asian Cup matches and stuff. But it's, you know, if you're called up to represent your national team, what better honor? And you can't take that away from him.
Yeah, if you don't want him, if you don't want him, you know, going abroad, and don't sign an Australian. You know,
it's not his fault. Australia is so far away.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be more worried if he was playing for New Zealand. That'd be a little bit more pointless, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That comes with the territory.
That's just the way I see it. But no, I mean, who is it? We've got Sunderland next week. Is that right?
Mm.
Just wondering.
Yeah, moving on quickly, because speaking of international football, mate, Chris Coleman, the action, you know, do I say legendary Wales manager, the man who has brought so much out of this Wales team, has moved to Sunderland, who we face on Tuesday.
That's ridiculous, man. What's he doing with his life?
That's a stupid decision, isn't it?
Well, I don't want to call him stupid, because obviously he knows
he gets some money. It's a paycheck. Is that Wonga?
It can't be the paycheck, though, man. It can't be the paycheck, because I'm sure that he's been paid fairly well at Wales. I just wish that Coleman had just waited a little bit longer so he's at a more suitable club. Having said that, being at Sunderland, technically looking at that squad, if he was to do a little bit of a Steve Bruce-style job, keep them up this season, and he might have one of the strongest squads in the Championship. Possibly.
The problem is, Chris Coleman has never been... Do I say he's never been a good club manager? You know, he is. I wouldn't say he's abjectly failed at every club he's been at, but he's just one who's kind of flitted from job to job, and he's never really left his mark. And I think this Sunderland team are doing their best to look like 2015 Aston Villa, as in they are hopeless. There are, you know, players who don't want to be there, and I do feel sorry for the fans, because I don't think Chris Coleman is the man to turn this around. Everything went right for him at Wales, in the sense that you have that star man and you have a bunch of characters to build around. Some real, you know, there's some real quality in that Wales team, and they love him.
I mean, the thing with Wales was, obviously he's got a team of players who in general aren't up to that international standard, but, you know, also he's got the likes of Aaron Ramsey who can turn it on. Aaron Ramsey, who, you know, without his injuries perhaps, and dare I say this, of the last 5 years, has been one of the candidates for the best midfielder in the league. One of the best midfielders in England, right? At the very least, for the last few years. And I have no qualms in saying that. And then you've got Gareth Bale, who is an absolutely ridiculous talent. And at least one of them is going to turn it on. You know, if those two don't turn it on, then, you know, you have got some other decent players in that team, like... I'm struggling now, but Joe, you know, you've had Joe Ledley in recent years, you know. Joe Allen, the Welsh Xavi, you know what I mean? But like, he as a Wales manager has always been upsetting the odds. He's been there as like in a team where they're the underdogs and nothing much is really expected of them, right? So when they do turn it up, it's like, oh great, we've got some momentum going. The question is, can he do that week in, week out at a club where all the fans are already frustrated and expect their team to get back up in the Premier League, where their best mates Newcastle are sitting, And this is where the issue is going to arise. I'm not sure he's going to be able to inspire that same mentality in that Sunderland team.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about new manager bias, but I think I spoke about this on Twitter yesterday. New manager bias, you know, new manager bounce, sorry. I'll come on to bias in a second, because bias is what makes us think that new manager bounce exists, because more often than not, it seems, or whatever it is, it seems to us that a new manager gets wins. And I think someone sent the stats to me and said, yeah, you're more or less right. You know, this is an old study, but just because it's a new manager doesn't mean they're going to beat your team.
Yeah, look at David Moyes today. Right, David Moyes comes into West Ham, yeah. Right, and I'm sorry, but bringing that guy in, with his typical, like absolutely typical English football, coaching staff, right, didn't make it straight off the bat, didn't it? Because at the end of the day, it's the rotten club. There's a lot of like, manager, Chris Coleman, obviously at Sunderland now. It's not going to paper over all of those cracks, is it? There's still so many issues.
Yeah, the big issue to me seems like that Chris Coleman is the same type of managerial talent as Simon Grayson, who they've just sacked. And that's not to say that either of them are bad or terrible. It just seems that they're the same calibre of manager. And I think Sunderland should have been a bit more ambitious. I mean, maybe Chris Coleman was the best name they could hire, but it does seem like this club is in a terrible tailspin. And this is Villa's match to lose, right, even with a new manager.
Well, yeah, exactly. The reason why I was asking, first of all, whether the game was next week is obviously we were talking about Jednak and how to fit him in the team. I think next week we shut them down at that midfield. Right? Dare you call me negative, but I say we go three in midfield next week. Right? I think Jednak, Hourihane and Whelan, stick them all in there and just stop them from playing. That will shut them down. You know, that will frustrate Sunderland. And, you know, by the second half, if they haven't scored a goal, then we surely will. That's the way I see us playing. I think that's the way we should do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing negative about that, about defensive football. It just means you're less likely to, you know, you're more risk adverse. You're not going to take silly, stupid risks. You're going to shut down the game. And you're going to break on the counter. And you're going to do them in. I mean, people want to see attacking football like the FIFA style of Pep Guardiola, where it's just insane. There's, you know, there's 20 shots, 26, 27 shots a game, and they're all on target and they're winning 8 or 10-0. But, you know, that's attacking football is not something that this Aston Villa team is suited for. But, you know, it is a defensive style, not where they're punting long balls up the pitch, but where they're shutting down and breaking rapidly on a counter. And that is defensive football. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we see Napoli. That's defensive football. Straight away doing rondos, you know, playing out from the back, playing smart and getting the ball up the pitch quickly. But, yeah, there's nothing wrong with, you know, sitting deep, playing out and springing, you know, like a spring-loaded counter-attack with Adoma and Snodgrass and Keenan Davis running up the pitch fast. I feel that's the best way to win. If we set out and try and pounce them and try and, I wouldn't say humiliate them, but if we try and exert our authority in a home game, we do seem to get turned over.
Yeah, we have got to watch our backs as well. And I think it's getting to that point in the season now where we can't afford to drop points. We've got to start picking those wins up. Because I think now Sheffield and Wolverhampton are running away with it, aren't they? And I think as well we can make a real statement as well by beating Sunderland. You know, that will put the whole Championship's eyes on us. Because you know what? That game is going to be the biggest game of the weekend, isn't it? It's going to be Coleman at Sunderland. He's the new manager at that team, who have just been relegated as well, should be of a Premiership level, which they're not. And I think we can get some real momentum if we shut down their party. You know, it's going to send Sunderland back into an absolute chaotic state. But I think if we shut them down, it can give us some real momentum and it would really make a statement.
Yeah, I completely agree, Daniel. We've got to get the job done. That's all I care about is getting that job done. Because if we can't stay camped with 10 men in the Sunderland half constantly pinging the ball into their box, because we'll play their game. They're going to look to spring, you know, real fast on that counter. If we're playing back with simply Chris Samba and James Chester, you know, waiting back in defence, we're going to get done on the wings. So I wouldn't be too surprised if we are patient.
Yeah.
Is a word I'll use.
Patron, that's how Coleman plays, though, isn't it? That's how Coleman plays. He does spring on the counter. That's how his Welsh side was so good. You know, they had some good midfielders who were good at passing the ball and obviously knew how to get the ball out to the two forwards. They usually played with two forwards and obviously one player behind them. And they were very good at making sure that the other team didn't eat into them too much. But their fullbacks obviously were wingbacks, weren't they? They pushed a little bit further forward, and you know, more often than not, they managed to get the job done against good opposition. So Coleman, he is going to try and do that against us. He will try and set that up, and I think as well Villa will react awkwardly to any team playing five at the back, especially because we tend to play with one real striker. Not really a problem necessarily if we've got wingers, but that is what I'm going to expect from Sunderland. They will set back and try to spring the counter attack. There's no other way. I think Coleman knows how to play, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like there's anything wrong with that, but if Villa try to overload the final third and try and really get an attack going, they're going to play right into Sunderland's hands, as any good counter is. You know, I'm not saying they sit deep and just draw to a stalemate, but you have to keep your eye on your own back and defend well. Any danger men do you think are for Sunderland? I mean, it sounds silly when they're so far off the pace in the league, they're so far down. But is there any real quality that you've seen throughout the season that Sunderland could deploy? I mean, Aidan McGeady seems like a name, but I'm not too sure what's going on.
No, McGeady obviously has done quite well. I think he's their leading assist. He's the leading one with their assists. I think he's got about 3 assists this season. But the one you really want to be watching out for, mate, is Lewis Graben. I'm not sure what his injury situation is like. I really, really hope he's not. I'm gonna check this up. Just about, he's a big danger man. He's likely to be fit though. But yeah, Graben, if he is fit, he's the one to really sort of look out for. He's bagged in 9 this season, which when you think about it, the way that Sunderland have been playing is exceptional. That's 9 from 12 appearances, by the way. So he's been sort of like one of their real sort of shining lights. The other one you want to look out for is George Honeyman. He's obviously been playing quite well for him as well this season. He's quite young. He's come through the academy, I believe. So yeah, you want to be looking out for James Honeyman and Lewis Graben, really. They do have dangers. You've got to remember that a lot of these players are good quality players. They are players who've played in the Premier League. It's just that altogether, it's a bit of a mishmash of a squad, mate. Yeah.
Any prediction then, coming off the back of that, for the game on Tuesday?
Ooh. This Sunderland are capable of scoring goals. This is the only thing that worries me. They did score twice against Millwall this weekend. So thinking like that, let me just think. You know, even against Middlesbrough, I think the week before they didn't do too well, and then but they did score 3 goals against Brentford too. Because of that, I do think we're going to concede. I can see it happening. I can see Sunderland springing. I think they'll take the lead, if I'm totally honest with you. But I'm going to give this another 2-1 victory to Villa. I do think we'll have enough to take them back. Because the thing is, as soon as we score against them again, they will absolutely sort of like, what's the word? They'll crumble. You know, they're just like we were last season. If anybody understands Sunderland's situation, it's us as Villa fans. So I do think that they'll spring the counter attack first of all. They'll score a goal. We'll be asleep, but we'll turn it around. That's exactly how I see it going. It'll be 2-1 to us.
Can't disagree with that. I think we should be beating Sunderland, mate. Moving on then to next Saturday. It's 2 home games in a row. We're versing Mick McCarthy's high-flying Ipswich Town. Dangerous team. I'm going to laugh at you. As unfashionable as he is, he gets the job done for Ipswich Town. Except promotion isn't the job he does. You know, he doesn't get the team promoted. Yeah. He just does well for a bit and then they kind of fade off. But Ipswich Town, one of the surprise teams that's won the UEFA Cup. I think they won it under Bobby Robson back in the day. The cosmopolitan Ipswich Town. We're going to take the piss and we're going to get battered now because I've taken the piss. But Ipswich Town, they are a team to look out for. They're like Cardiff in the sense that they were leading the table early on. But Ipswich Town come to Villa Park on the Saturday. And do we have to worry too much about them?
Not as much. I don't think we've got to worry about them any more specifically than we would do any other mid-table championship side. It's once again a game we should be winning, right? The problem with Mick McCarthy at Ipswich, as you said, is he does a lot right, but he doesn't get him promoted. That side is just the absolute epitome of championship mediocrity. They're not going to go up. They haven't got an awful lot to play for, if I'm totally honest with you. Having said that, right? Joe Garner is going to be absolutely dangerous for us in that box. I'm going to tell you that, right? That guy's like that guy's ability from set pieces and just in terms of being able to hassle a defense, he is going to make us struggle unless Chris Samba does manage to get himself sharp enough. During the week against Sunderland, we are going to have trouble over there. So yeah, that's the only thing I'd say. There is some things to obviously worry about from Ipswich. Don't get me wrong; they know what it's like to play at this level. So yeah, I think Joe Garner is going to be the real threat. If I'm totally honest with you, anybody you've identified?
To be honest, man, Ipswich is a town that I don't know. I just don't know any players from them. I can name names from every single Championship team. Like Lafondra, for Burton Albion, we've got Matty Palmer, we've got Lucas Atkins, Lloyd Dyer for Birmingham, we've got Hotter in the middle. But Ipswich Town, I am completely unknowledgeable about anything they do, except I thought they were going to get promoted at the start of the season when they were doing really well. But my friend at the blog, 7500, said Alex Carson, he does a lot of analysis for us in his column, Expected Villa, which is a play on expected goals, XG. And he accurately predicted that Ipswich Town would fall apart because, their goal tally wasn't meeting their expected goal tally, as in they were literally finishing every single chance they made. And those chances were few and far between. And it does seem like that they have dropped off on the form recently. They lose, win, draw, which is mixed as it comes, whereas Aston Villa can boast more wins in the last six games than them. So I think, the form's on our side and we're at home. But then again, Ipswich Town were the team that ended our unbeaten streak at home last year. Thankfully, the streak's already gone, so the hoodoo's off our back, so we don't have to worry about pressure anymore at home. What we have to worry about is if we're going to slip up to Ipswich like we did against Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at how they lined up against Hull this weekend. They drew 2-2 with them, by the way. Just so you, I've got
Stole the.
Say that again.
Perfect. But yeah, they stole the draw right at the death. And I've got a friend at work who loves Hull, home and every single match, home and away, he goes to, and they haven't won in ages, bloody ages. And we do rip it out of him, but. It does seem like his club's in the tailspin like Sunderland. But Ipswich did steal a goal, Jordan Spence, right at the end. So I'm going to go for his danger man because he's the only man. David McGoldrick's another name I recognise.
He scored
last week.
He scored this weekend. He scored against Sunderland as well. Yeah, he's always going to be dangerous.
But it's a Mick McCarthy team. Yeah, a Mick McCarthy team speaks to me like a lot like a Neil Warnock team. And that sounds, like I'm making an obvious conclusion from that. But they are very similar managers. The styles are almost identical. They're going to play the same. They're going to set up the same. And we always seem to have trouble against Neil Warnock. And we do seem to have a lot of trouble against Ipswich. We didn't get a result against them last season at all. And that worries me in the sense that if we don't pick up the result against Coleman and Sunderland, that we go into this Ipswich game and it doesn't work out for us as much as we expected, and go back to square one after all this optimism. But then again, we're in form. We have to make the most of it.
Yeah, look, we haven't got to worry about getting outplayed by Ipswich. That's not something I feel is going to happen. I mean, look, Jordan Spence and even Knudsen at left back, right? Both of those lads aren't naturally fullbacks. Now, I might be saying something that I might stand to be corrected with, but I've never seen them as fullbacks who are very good at going forward at the very least. And you also look at the rest of their side and it's just a bit unbalanced when it comes to creating chances and just having creative players there. They're not gonna trouble us when it comes to actually playing football. What we have got to worry about is the set pieces and being able to break them down. This is this kind of game though where somebody like Adoma getting in behind the defense could be incredibly useful. We're gonna have to utilize the pace that we do have, because yeah, we're struggle aerially against them. That's the big danger when we do come up against them. I mean, even Skuse in that midfield, another tall lad. We need to be careful against them when it does come to that. That's the only thing I'd say. Perhaps something that Chris Samba would help us with.
So, what is your prediction then for our second home game of the week? You said we'd beat Sunderland. So, what's gonna happen in this Ipswich game?
Sometimes I'm far too optimistic, aren't I? I mean, I don't want to predict anything other than a win here against Ipswich. I think you are right about the way that Mick McCarthy does tend to do well against us. I'd be interested to see what the actual stat is. But because of the fact that Ipswich are quite prone to conceding goals, yeah, as we have seen against Hull, shouldn't be conceding too many goals against them. I'm going to go with us probably winning this one. But I think, and I know we haven't had this kind of a game in a while, I'm going to go with a 3-2 victory. I think we might concede against them. I think we're going to get troubled when it does come to a corner or a free kick, some sort of freak set-piece moment that they will score against us. I'm going to go 3-2, though. I do think we can score goals against them. What did you just drop, mate?
Show notes, phone, everything. It was on my lap, and I've just rolled over, and it's all dropped to the floor. Hopefully not like Villa, mate. Hopefully we aren't dropping through the Championship table floor. Next time we record next Sunday, we've got, as you predicted, hopefully a big win against Sunderland and a big win against Ipswich. So fingers crossed next time we record, and we've got 6 points in the bag.
Hold it, mate. What about you? Yeah, you haven't given a prediction.
Come on, man. Don't do this thing, man. Okay, for Sunderland, I'm going with a big win. I'm going 3-0.
Going big win? Yeah, so you think we're going to like... Mate. You think we're going to absolutely obliterate them even with a new manager there?
Oh, it doesn't make much difference to how unfortunately terrible Sunderland are. They're rock bottom of a Championship table. It's not difficult to not be rock bottom of the Championship table, and Sunderland are...
No, you've got a good point there, mate.
You know, there are bad teams this year. You know, we've got the unfortunate situation at Bolton. We've got Burton, you know, no budget, but Burton practically hanging on.
I don't know how they're here.
Worked there's miracles. I don't know how they are in the Championship. They were Sunday League not 9 or 10 years ago. We've got Birmingham, of course, who for some reason are still struggling. I'm not even sure how this is capable from the quality that's in their team. They've got some good players and they're just so bad. Birmingham always are.
They did win this weekend.
Fair enough. But Sunderland are trying really hard to be the worst team in the league, and when the worst team in the league comes to one of the high flyers in the league, as Aston Villa are at this moment, we can't deny how good they're doing. We've got to win, and you've got to make the statement. You've got to win big, and you've got to put 3 goals past them. If we can put 4 past Norwich, we've got to put 3 past Sunderland. I mean, maybe they score first, maybe they do get one, but Villa got to make a statement. They've got to shut Chris Coleman down. They've got to make his life a little bit harder, and I don't want to heap the misery on Sunderland, but you got to win that game. You got to win it big, and you got to make the statement, and you got to make the fans at home happy, and then you go to the next game, Ipswich, and you hopefully win 2-1, as I'm predicting. I don't know. I think I want us to win. Of course I do. Of course I want us to win. But Ipswich seem like a difficult team to A, break down, and B, even find a chance to break down. They're going to set up in a difficult manner. They're going to set up in a smart and intelligent manner. I think it will be a 1-1 against Ipswich. 3-0 Sunderland and 1-1 Ipswich.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, Sunderland could be a good hat-trick opportunity for Keenan Davis.
Well,
if Jedinak doesn't beat him to it.
Oh, hopefully. I mean, if you can find the net. Yeah, I mean, if Keenan Davis can find the net, because he's been struggling to get any shots past the keeper at the moment. But yeah, mate, what better note to end the podcast on today than that pure optimism from us both, I believe. I mean, a 1-1 draw is not that negative, right?
Nah, not against Ipswich. Not against Ipswich. It's all good at that point. They are the kind of team, I will say, they are the kind of team that will cause us trouble when it comes to playing football and matching the side 1-1, apart from perhaps Wolverhampton Wanderers, then, you know, we are one of the best teams in the Championship. But when it comes to set pieces, it comes to height, and it comes to a team who are just very good at dare I say it, fouling as well, and just being good at winning the ball from set pieces, we will struggle against that kind of side, especially because we are prone to giving away City free kicks.
Oh, yeah, mate, let's hope that we get the positive result that I think we all need to carry on the good times. Hopefully we'll be in a just as good mood next Sunday when we come to record. But yeah, as for me, James Rushton, you can find me on Twitter at Gemma Rushton. And Danny, where can they find you, mate?
Yeah, find me on Twitter at DH Raza, and of course on Instagram at DH Raza as well. lots of details about what I do there as well. So you can catch me on TV as well every Saturday morning from 11 a.m. More info on that on my social profiles.
Perfect. Yeah, so catch him on TV and catch us in your ears next Sunday with hopefully 6 points in the bag against Sunderland and Ipswich. Hope you have a good night. Catch you later.